Thanks so much, Steve. Hi, everybody. It's Bill Leff and it's Wendy Snyder. This is Tuesday. Welcome to the show. Call us or text us. We would love to hear from you. We're at 312-981-7200. Hi, Wendy. How are you?
I'm fine. How are you, Bill Leff?
Nice to see you. Nice to see you.
Do you have a tattoo on your arm?
Yeah. It says John DeCoss.
Why?
Because he's my friend and I wanted that to be forever.
It just looks like blue ink.
Yeah. I wrote it in. As a reminder to someday get them.
So you have to update that every day, or how does that stay fresh?
Yeah, I will have every day. I will have to get a Bic pen and write his name again on my arm, just as a symbol of our friendship.
And should Bic ever go out of business?
Oh, don't even. I can't even think about it.
You know, see, that's the problem. If that was a real tattoo, because you put it towards you, so you can read John DeCoss, but in a way, it should be going outward, so other people can read it.
I couldn't write it upside down. Or I would have done that.
But if I thought John's... you were ambidextrous.
I am, but ambidextrous doesn't translate to writing upside down.
And maybe John is just his personal guidance, and he's the one who needs to see it.
That's true. That's true.
It's not for others. It's for Bill.
It's one of the reasons I can't get a real tattoo is I wrote it in 10 minutes ago. I'm already tired of it.
Like because your penmanship is awful. It looks like, it doesn't look like John DeCoss.
Well, no.
It's like Joan of Arc.
It's his name, not a drawing.
Yeah. I'm not an artist. Obviously. Anyone who's heard the show will agree. I'm certainly not an artist. All right. There is much to discuss with you. You know how you're always saying, when is this weather going to end? It's cold and it's dismal and it's gray.
I asked you. I said,
today
when
you
is
asked.
This over? You and said, you said June. And
yeah,
I said,
and
can you guarantee
nice.
It?
All right.
You guaranteed me Donald Trump wouldn't win.
Yeah. So I'm on a roll.
You're a soothsayer.
All right. So in Michigan, in Grand Rapids, Michigan, there's a weathercaster named Gary Frank. And Gary is fed up with the weather. So the other day, as they're introducing the weather, he just loses it on the air. Would you like to hear it?
Yeah.
It's fun. All right. This is Gary Frank from Grand Rapids, Michigan. Now, it starts out in the very beginning. It's him kind of doing panel. You've seen this in the news. The weather guy is talking to the anchors and the sports guy, Biff the sports guy and the anchors.
It's usually when he's walking over to the screen.
That's what you're getting. That's what you're getting. All right. So listen for that and just watch how it just kind of falls apart on Gary Frank. And then the best part is when it's the traffic guy's turn to come on. He's scared. That's my favorite part. All right, so listen to this. This is from Grand Rapids, Michigan.
Outside,
I think it's going to be fine.
Good.
You know, it'll be fine.
All right.
Could be worse.
Yeah.
Like has been worse. Well, because you guys are dragging me down. You guys keep... Well, every time I get done with the 7 day, you guys are like, oh, gosh. Oh. Every time. Doesn't matter what time I come on. 4:30, 5:30, 6:30, and then you expect me to be chipper for 5 straight hours. It's miserable.
Well, what are you supposed
I want you guys to say, wow, that's great news. It's going to be 60 on Friday.
You said it's
going to
snow.
Well, I mean, what do you want me to do? Lie to you? I'll put 70 every day next time. God.
Thank you for your commitment.
Man, thank you. Mr. Davis appreciates it. He knows when to bundle up.
Yep.
Here's some wind. Here's some temperature, 20s. Feels like 19 or feels like 70. I don't know. 47, partly cloudy, southwest breeze 10 to 15. Here's a 60. I don't know if that's good enough for you guys. Get excited. Maybe I'll disappoint you with the 7 day here in a few minutes.
Is he done?
That's the traffic
that
guy.
Terrifying.
Afraid
the
for his life.
Put it this way.
All right, you can
that
cut it, Chaz.
That's why they're in Grand Rapids. Can I just tell you that? Because he's taking it so personally.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, we're mad because the weather sucks. We don't blame him for it.
But, you know, this guy, probably everywhere he goes, it's like Skilling right now.
Yeah,
you
but
know?
Right. Skilling knows how to handle it. He's a professional.
But you're the
and he wears a hoodie.
Yes, he does, Mayor. But if you're the messenger, you know that phrase, don't shoot me, I'm only the messenger. If you're the messenger and the news is bad every day, at some point, as you just saw, you're going to crack. That guy just cracked.
Conrad cracks all the time, but not just for weather-related issues.
Right.
Paul Conrad.
Paul does, yeah.
They're trying to rip off WGN Morning News, by the way.
There's a little bit of the flavor
there. Not going to do it.
If you were him, would you send this out as your demo tape? I would.
No, he's...
I would just show everybody.
I don't know.
You never know what you're going to get.
I can't quite... I can't quite tell if it's serious or meant to be funny. It's not enough of either. You know what I
well,
mean?
Well, in the beginning, his coworkers were joking around with him.
And
going,
put them on mic when they're talking back.
I know,
here's an idea.
That's awkward, right? You hear them out in the distance, but they're there. So I think in the beginning, they're playing with him because a lot of times, you know, on the news, that's part of the banter is,
right.
Yeah, we'll have some fun with the weather guy, you know? The news has been harsh, so with him, we can have a little fun at the weather's expense. But then it quickly devolves, you know?
And, you know, when our teams are doing poorly, sometimes they tease the sports guy. Although you notice they never tease the anchors for giving bad news because that's what they do all the time.
That's what they should do. The weather guy and the sports guy should rip on the news. But, hey, how about a little good news? How about something to keep us smiling, please?
I can't quite tell if he's, you know, it sounds like he's goofing around.
Oh, no. You got to see it.
No, I just watched it. He's
all right. You see it in his face,
all right,
then, right,
then
Steve?
I'm more irritated.
He
with
is
him.
Not happy.
Why? I think it's funny that Wendy's like offended by the guy or ticked at him.
Well, I mean, this is what he does for a living,
right? But it's I'm sure if we watched the previous 25 or 30 broadcasts, he's had a stiff upper lip about this. You know, it's going to be cold again.
He wasn't going to. I'm looking at it. He wasn't going to slug anyone.
No,
but he was like, "What do you want me to do?"
But what do you? All right. So here's what I'm wondering, Steve. What happened when the news was over? Like when everybody went back to their dressing rooms, was there a visit from a general manager or a program director?
No,
or
the therapist.
Was it a therapist?
Jeff Hoover would never let this fly on WGN TV Morning News.
No. It would be addressed immediately and fixed.
I disagree. I bet Conrad does a parody of it next week.
Well, that would be funny. That would be super funny.
This guy should just be happy that he has something to talk about.
Right.
You know, like with traffic. It's
yeah.
the same thing. You know, people always say, oh, traffic's so bad.
Mary, I hate you because of the traffic.
But I guarantee, Mary, there have been people who have blamed you, right?
And they're stupid.
Oh, yeah. They ask me, how can it be congested? How does that work? Like, I don't know. You know, they ask dumb questions like that. It's like people put their foot on the brake.
Yeah.
Well, you know, but I mean, I'm almost happy sometimes when there's an accident because I have something to talk about.
That.
I mean, you hate to say it, but it's true. You know, this guy should be happy that he has stuff to talk about. And if it's going to be bad weather, oh, well.
You should just say when people go, how can this happen? Go, well, there's a lot of people driving on roads at the same exact time, and this creates traffic. And then just see what they do with that information.
They're going to look at her and go, duh.
Yeah, they still don't get it.
But the question deserves that answer.
Yeah, well, that's what I get.
You did traffic. Didn't people sometimes just say to you, hey, fix this.
No,
I have to be somewhere.
I got to tell you, I did traffic for a short amount of time, and I never really put my all into it. I don't even know what the Edens is. I just read what somebody gave me. Have I been on the Edens? Is that going out to maybe Old Orchard?
You could take the Edens to Old Orchard, yeah.
Right, maybe I've been on the Edens.
Yes.
I just know what I take, which is the Stevenson and the Eisenhower. That's it.
So when other highways would come up, you just wouldn't know? You wouldn't look it up?
Why would I look it up? I was given the information.
Would you ever say on the Edens, wherever that is, it's
no, why
minutes.
Would I do that? So I was paid to do a job.
Come on, you really didn't know for sure where the Edens was?
I don't know what the corresponding numbers are to this day. I know that 290 is the Eisenhower. I know that the Ryan goes to Sox Park. I know
is that why
55
when you,
is the Stevenson.
A lot of times when you're late, you'll come in and you'll go, I can't believe there's so much traffic. And I always go, but you did traffic every day. How did you not know there was traffic?
Listen, I don't live and breathe traffic. I was never an expert. I look to Mary Vandeveld. Of course, there's Bart Shore, who's awesome.
Mm-hmm.
I would always call him and go, "What? How do I say this?"
And he'd say, Edens. It's pronounced Edens. It's not Edens because I was going to go with Edens.
No,
it's like
Edens.
Barbara.
Right.
I've heard of it. I didn't know like the. Can I just tell you about traffic? When I'm coming in the morning, I normally want to take I-55, but there's no easy way to come in anymore from LaGrange. It really isn't. It used to be 45 minutes every single day. And now we've talked about this with Mary, and I didn't blame her, but it can be 45 minutes one day and an hour 30 the next day.
Mm-hmm.
There's no rhyme or reason.
Mm-hmm.
So when I'm on a road, that's the only road I listen for.
But everybody's like, nobody
right,
goes.
Right, so I've never really been on the Edens.
But you have curiosity.
I didn't during traffic reports at all.
Didn't you ever have to drive it, though, to get up that way from downtown if you were going to Skokie or something?
You hear the
didn't
word.
Didn't really go to Skokie.
Like Meacham Road. I wonder where Meacham Road is. Doesn't occur to you to...
No, not really. And in fact, when I've come across Meacham, which I believe is it near Roselle somewhere? Would I see Meacham out there? Because as I'm driving, I'd be like, there's Meacham. Oh, what do you know?
Kids.
I-65, I was on once, and I'm like,
there.
Oh, my God, this is where it is?
Oh, it's Narragansett.
The tri-state goes to...
I know it's Narragansett. I felt for that.
The tri-state goes to two other states. This is fantastic.
Who knew? They should call it the
three-state.
Hey, I did traffic because there were no other jobs in radio at the time for me.
Oh, I know.
So, I mean, I'm...
But wouldn't it be like the sports guy going, they keep saying the Houston Astros, but I don't know who they're talking about. It's like,
why would he say that on the air? I say it now. If I was doing traffic now, I wouldn't say it. I'd be like, oh, the Edens, love it.
Been there.
On it right now.
Yeah, I'm on it now. It's fantastic. All right, we'll take a quick break, and then there's more show. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. Can we talk about Harry Anderson for just a minute or two?
Yes.
Is that good?
And definitely go to WGNradio.com because our interview is posted. Jasmine, did you do that? Or was it Dave Marzullo?
Dave Marzullo did
Dave
that.
Marzullo is a He's genius because I kind of forgot we talked to him.
Yeah, a couple years ago.
WGNradio.com, and we could put it on our Facebook page, too.
All right. It's also on Twitter. I put that on there last night.
Well done, Jazz. All right, so Harry Anderson fits this category of people who you almost feel like you know because you saw him on TV so many times, you know, on certainly on Night Court or on Cheers where he started out. Dave's World.
Yeah, Dave's World. I'd forgotten about that until last
night. That was on for I used to watch three or four years. Bit.
And I have a question for you, because in his bio, it said that he performed on Saturday Night Live for about 5 years. Mm-hmm. Was he part of the cast?
Mm-mm. He would just... there was a long period on Saturday Night Live where they'd have a kind of young, up-and-coming, hopefully edgy comics, like Andy Kaufman.
Just doing a segment.
Were not regular, but quasi-regular, right?
Right. Remember Joel Hodgson from Minnesota fit that bill also. They would just, and now the comedy of, and then they'd bring the guy out and they would just do kind of.
I forgot about that. I remember, and that's where I first saw Andy Kaufman with the Oklahoma and the Mighty Mouse.
Yeah. So Harry Anderson was also in that kind of vein where.
Magician?
Yeah. It was more magic than it was comedy. It was a kind of a hybrid of the two. But I think that's where I first saw him do that trick where he would take the needle and he'd put it through his arm.
Yeah.
Which I still to this day, I'm usually really good at figuring out how those things are done.
I know,
done.
You spoil it for me every time I'm with you and we have a magician around.
I can't believe you could watch that, Bill.
It's hard to watch.
But you needle person.
Yeah.
Needle boy.
Well, because...
Needle nose.
Because I know he's not really putting or wasn't putting a needle through his arm. So I'd watch it to try to figure out how he was doing
it.
And I saw him do it a dozen times and I don't know how he did it. I have no idea.
He was so nice.
Well, that's what I was going to say is when you see these guys in on TV or in movies for so long and you think you know them and then he was coming in to do our show. And in my head, I'm going, oh, please be a good guy. Please be a good guy because I like you so much. And then he's even nicer than you hope. You know,
he was
just such a nice man. And we had some friends in common. There were when I did stand up, there were a couple of magicians I worked with who were old friends of Harry's. And we talked about that off air. And I just, you know, 65 is, as we all know, is just way too young. So I miss him already.
He was a very good guy.
Yeah.
Just the SNL thing kind of threw me a little bit.
Oh, the fact that he performed on there? You know, what's interesting about him is, and he talked about this a little bit with us, but I've read other interviews where he talked about it a lot, is zero training as an actor. You know, he started out kind of doing what he did on Cheers, which was he was kind of a flim-flam man. He would take to the streets.
And say, what is a flim-flam man?
He would do like, do you know what the shell game is, right?
Yeah.
All right, so you see this. Or
a
three
con
card
artist?
Monty. Yeah. He was that.
A flim-flam man. That was sweet.
Thanks. he would just go and he would do these, you know, these games, these shell games or three card Monty games, and he did quite well doing it. And then, you know, just somehow parlayed that into success on TV. And, you know, he
was great
more amazed
on TV
by it than anybody was. He was nice so guy. Good on TV. Nominated 3 times for an Emmy Award for Night Court.
That was a great show.
Yeah.
It wasn't great. It served its purpose, I guess, at the time.
It's funny. He never won. John Larroquette, who played Dan on the show, Dan Fielding, always won for Best Supporting Actor. But Harry was always nominated or often nominated and never won. But, you know, he was, like I said, he was kind of, he was so taken that he made it that far. You know, he always said, I'm not an actor. I just kind of fell into this. So good for him.
He did a good job with it. And how old was he?
65 years old.
And they found him in his residence. Do we know exactly the cause of death?
No cause of death as of now. Or if there is one, they're not releasing that.
Poor guy.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. We'll do this. We'll take a quick break. And then there's all kinds of things planned for you. Stay here. It's Bill Leff and Wendy Snyder on WGN. Just what I saw.
It's a Headbanging Tuesday here with Bill Leff and Wendy Snyder.
It is, isn't it? It is a Headbanging Tuesday. Wendy, I just showed you a picture, and I wish so badly I could show it to everybody. I can't because it's radio, but what we can do is we can post it on our Facebook page so you can see the same hideous photograph that I've just showed you, Wendy.
There's a video, isn't there?
There is a video. Now, on the websites that I have visited, they don't show the video. They only show the picture. I'm still trying to find the video. It must be out there somewhere because they've taken a still from the video and posted it online. What we're talking about is in Argentina, there's this creature that appears to be half human and half animal.
I don't think so. Although it does look like it's carrying a briefcase, so maybe that's the half human part.
It has a small briefcase, like an attaché case.
That's just markers on the wall, but that does not look human to me at all.
Here's the story. Again, this is out of Santa Fe, Argentina. Where we are number 3. Did you know that?
Glad we're that number.
We're number 3
somewhere.
In Santa Fe, Argentina. They love sports shows there. So the first 2 shows are sports shows, but we have the number 1 talk show there.
Who's number 1? The Fabulous Sports Babe?
Yeah. Yeah.
Damn. We got to work harder.
Beba Fopiloso.
Good
she
for
is
you.
Called there. A mysterious
Did you see a doctor about that?
Yeah, I saw a doctor about that. A mysterious half-human, half-animal creature has been caught on camera after it is said to have savaged 2 dogs. The beast is reported to have been spotted prowling the streets of Santa Fe, Argentina. This photo was taken after it is said to have butchered a German Shepherd and a pit bull. No easy task.
No, because the German Shepherd, 2 separate dogs?
Yeah, those are 2 different dogs.
All right, pit bull, jaw power like you wouldn't believe,
yeah.
Very tough.
They don't stand for being savaged.
But smaller than this thing. The German Shepherd is a larger dog.
Right.
But still, 2 tough dogs to be taken down by the beast.
Yeah. Some locals liken the creature to a camel.
A really skinny camel with no hump and way smaller.
I would not. There's a lot of things I would compare this picture of this creature to, and camel, I think that's a disservice to everybody.
It looks like a combination greyhound and cheetah.
Yeah, that's much more accurate. Why would they say
camel?
Why would they say camel?
And part peacock.
not a lot.
It's
but,
closer to a peacock
right.
than a camel.
Camel wouldn't be, seriously, if somebody goes, name 30 animals this creature looks like, I wouldn't say, well, camel, obviously.
No.
It doesn't look anything like
maybe
a camel.
Maybe the color of a camel, like camel brown.
Maybe
it was smoking.
It probably smokes camels.
Sorry.
I bet that's why they called it that. Some locals liken the creature to a camel because of its long neck and small head. Well, all right. It was uploaded on the YouTube channel's UFO Mania.
Oh.
Now is the time we need Art Bell more than ever.
God rest his soul,
now,
Art
this
Bell.
This is when we need Art Bell. And now has been viewed by more than 30,000 people.
Wow, that's not that many.
That's not a lot. That's not, actually...
It's not a camel, and it's not a lot of people.
Maybe putting it under the title of, doesn't this look like a camel? Maybe that's what's keeping people away. I bet if they said mysterious beast killing dogs, people would want to see it. But they go, boy, does this look like a camel? Nobody wants to see that. It has now been viewed, like I said, 30,000 times. One person commented, I saw one of these things in 2005. It was crossing a bridge when we came upon it. It blew my mind because it looked at us and turned and began moving like a kangaroo.
It has a kangaroo-esque type. It looks like... They're showing it walking it on all fours, but it looks like it has the ability to walk on 2
right,
legs.
Right.
It's kind of scary.
Right.
It said it cleared the concrete bridge wall easily, and then it dropped at least 15 to 20 feet.
Wow.
That's impressive. Another added, here in the Philippines, these are called aswangs. A-S-W-A-N-G.
I like the way yo ass swings. Should I go home now?
Yes. I think you need to go home now.
Oh, I did not have enough coffee this morning.
That word that shall not be repeated, because you heard what Wendy did the first time, translates to a man who has the ability to transform into a monster dog.
That's called something else. It's not chupacabra. What's the shapeshifter? Isn't there something?
Oh, is there a word for it?
I thought so.
I don't know. A-S-W-A-N-G.
Aswang. You'll never think of that word the same.
I would never will. He then said, it is a demon. It can even shift into a cat or a big bird. Now, I think he's reading into
Gordon.
No, not Sesame Street, Big Bird. But one insider insisted, Wendy, you get a point on this, insisted that it is a chupacabra, which is a vampire-like dog with strong roots in Latin folklore. So nobody's quite sure. Now, this website, this is the New York Post, they do show the video, and it's just kind of walking around. It's not pretty. Ugh. I would scream bloody murder if I saw something like this. When I'm just looking at it online, and I'm going to scream.
When you scream bloody murder, do you actually say bloody murder?
Yeah, I scream the words bloody murder. Yeah. Now, in the video they're showing on the website, on the New York Post's website, they're not showing it actually move. They're just showing the picture they're like zooming in on it and moving it around. But it doesn't look like something that somebody, you know, like with the Loch Ness Monster, you always knew anytime you saw that real grainy picture of the Loch Ness Monster, you go, some guys put that in the water, in the lock.
Why do you think this is real?
It looks so real.
I can't, it won't
doesn't
load
it?
Up on me.
It looks very real.
New York Post, it will not, I cannot see the video.
All right, so we'll put the picture. We don't have the video yet, but we'll put the picture on our Facebook page, Bill Leff and Wendy Snyder on Facebook. You decide for yourself. It's hideous, and it doesn't look that much like a camel. That's the one takeaway I have from this is whoever described it as a camel, very bad at identifying mysterious animals.
So if you were like the Stormy Daniels artist drawing a sketch of you'd say, first of all, make it hideous. And please. Make it not look like a camel.
Right. Here's a photo of a camel that I carry around with me. Do not make it look like
make
this.
Make it look not like this.
Yes. Do everything in your power for this to not be the end result. All right. We'll take a quick break, and then Bridget Carey joins us from CNET. We'll find out what she knows next. Stick around. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
It is a Tech Tuesday, and on the line with us is CNET Senior Editor Bridget Carey. Bridget, how are you today?
You know what? We're doing good. There's always something to keep us busy in the tech world.
Give us a few for instances.
Well, for one, let's see. I've been doing a lot on artificial intelligence stuff today. And
I have that.
Cool. Well, Google has this new thing that they're selling. Actually, they're selling it at Target. These little kits that let you make your own smart home gadgets, as if there wasn't enough things in the world to listen to us and track us. You can do your own tracking and listening gadgets now. It's good for tinkers. Instead of DIY, they call it AIY, like artificial intelligence yourself. This latest one is basically make a little camera that can detect faces. It can track faces, so it can kind of move along and find something, or not just faces, but objects. Like it can, if you point it at a banana, it knows there's a banana there, and then you can from there program other things. And you would attach it to maybe a light bulb or other things you want to move or react, or maybe notify you when it can text you. There's one with a voice recognition system too. It's a little cheaper. And let's say you want to connect it to a train, like a little toy train. You could like speak and have it answer a certain command to turn the train on and off. You know,
who's going to do this?
Also very more advanced.
These are for kids or for adults or for who, Bridget? Who's the target on this?
I would say the broadest target is teens who want to tinker and learn programming. Oh. But it does it really could be for anyone who wants to tinker and program, because it's very advanced too. I mean, it comes with a little mini computer and you can just really get to learn how to program there. But I think the bigger takeaway in this is that it's so affordable now to make these chips that have artificial intelligence in them that you're going to start seeing it in more and more things. Right now, the top-of-the-line iPhone has processors and chips that have AI built in, so it can detect when your face glances at the phone to unlock it, that kind of thing. Chips themselves are laptops. They're not really getting faster, but instead, they're adding AI smarts to them so they can kind of listen to you quicker or be able to process a task better instead of and be more efficient, I would say, with the task they're doing. So that security camera in the corner, it's not recording all day long. Instead, it's only recording when it notices a certain person walking by and then maybe records that clip or sends you an alert for something that looks strange. You're programming what is strange to a camera, right? You're like teaching visual objects. So I think that's how things are changing, and it's getting to the point where, yeah, you can go to Target and just buy a little kit and learn how to do it yourself to, you know, make your own little project at home.
They seem primitive to me, but I guess as time goes on, they'll become a little more, just more difficultly structured, right? I mean, these are. I remember like when Atari and Intellivision had early programs to teach you how to program your computer. So that's, it's like our version of that, right? The new version of that.
Yeah. And when this technology gets cheaper and cheaper, you may feel like in your consumer life that you may want to upgrade your laptop or upgrade that phone, because the technology is going to be in the lower grade phones too, and you kind of have more of a reason. Because honestly, when it comes to like laptops, they all do the same thing, and you feel like they're not getting that much faster.
Yeah.
But, oh, wait, now it can do a new trick. You know, that's really the bigger takeaway.
And this is included with or to be used with this Raspberry Pi, is that correct? Because my 15-year-old has this thing, and I don't even know what it is. I just know I paid for it.
Raspberry Pi is like, it looks like your little classic green chip with a bunch of circuits on it, and it's really just a tiny, tiny computer, and it's raw, and this kit actually comes in a cardboard box that holds it, so it's very cheap in that regard, but you would attach it to any sort of other wiring gadget. So if you say turn on the lights, you could make, you know, if you attach it to a lamp, you could turn it on, or even more advanced things, you could take it from there with robotics, you know, or like Legos that move, you can like push circuits and gears, that kind of thing.
It's killing me. I know kids can really use computers properly and everything. My 15-year-old bought different components, wanted them for Christmas, and then assembled his whole gaming desktop. And, you know, he's showing me how to do it. It looks pretty easy to even put a computer together.
You know, like, especially with how ample there are on YouTube tutorials and stuff, I feel like you can get into this and not be so afraid, so to speak, you know, because there's so many resources out there that weren't there before.
Bridget, do the story about Android tracking kids, but improperly. What do we need to know about this?
Oh, yeah. So a study just came out that this group that cares about privacy was looking at about 6,000 Android apps in the U.S. store. Mm-hmm. Found about half of them are violating COPPA. That's that rule, the Children's Online Privacy Protection Act. It's supposed to, like, be a guide to say, hey, if you have an app that's for someone under 13, you have to get parents' permission to use, and you can't collect data on kids that are under 13. Well, it turns out about 3,000 apps in this study were found to collect data for kids under 13. We're talking things that might be used to track for advertisements, but also many of them were just not found to be doing a good enough job to get that parental approval. So even some of the ones that were games you would assume would be good for kids, like there's a game Disney makes called Where's My Water. There's a Minion Rush, a Duolingo app that people use to learn languages.
Mm-hmm.
There's no step to say, hey, are you 13? There could be ads targeting your kids if they're using this if they're younger. It just kind of shines a spotlight. We're always talking about data collection.
issues that parents, you got to just know that, you know, not everything's asking or protecting your kid against, you know, targeted advertisements or data collection that could be sensitive data about where you live and your location. And I don't know what's going to be done to enforce it, right? Because there's, sure, you have this law, but nothing's being done to enforce the law.
Is this being done by the junior department of Cambridge Analytica? Who's behind this?
That's a good one, but it's sad. Oh, God, it's sad.
Oh, all right.
You know, I'm thinking about, God, I'm so thankful we didn't have smartphones when I was growing up, because there were many times I may have said I was at my friend Sue's house, but might have been at Richie's house, and they yeah. lived very close together. So if my mom didn't believe me and said, I'm coming to pick you up, I would just walk to Sue's house.
Sure.
Now, when my kids are out, first of all, they text me back right away. They've never given me problems, but I know that I have the ability to say, share your location with me, and if they don't, then I know they're up to no good. So I'm really glad there were no smartphones when I was growing up. I wouldn't have had as much fun.
I think every generation has a version of this, and it all comes down to teaching your kids common sense. I was on AOL chat rooms. There was nothing, you know, saying, hey, are you under 13
right.
here talking to strangers? But luckily, I had enough common sense training to know that if someone was asking some weird questions, I know, you know, what is this loser doing, you know? So,
like, what's your address? And by the way, what's your bra size?
Yeah, and send me a picture. That kind of stuff always happened. But you have to, you know, go into each kid individually and see if they're mature enough to go on these platforms and to just know what they're going on. Just because it's a big company you know doesn't mean it's necessarily safe or not collecting data.
But isn't there some way, Bridget, that a smart kid could rewire this to work so that they say, all right, it looks like I'm in this place, but I'm really in this place. Couldn't somebody redo it a little bit?
Oh, yeah, and you can hide your phone somewhere.
Yeah. There's ways around it.
Really? I don't trust anyone anymore.
You can't.
Yeah, I think there's got to be some level of trust in the family.
Nope, no place for it.
Keystroke logging is the next thing. There you go. You can do that.
Well, I it's just funny to hear you change about internet and all these things now that you're a mom. I enjoy hearing it, Bridget. It's kind of cute.
Oh, it's inevitable that I'm going to be facing more and more doom as every year goes by.
Absolutely. Thank you so much. She is a senior editor at CNET. You can find Bridget Carey at CNET.com. She's also on Twitter at Bridget Carey. Thank you so much on this Tech Tuesday.
All right. Talk to you later. Thanks.
That's Bridget Carey from CNET. We'll take a quick break, give you some news, and then more show. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
I love this song.
Isn't
I wish they'd play it
Wendy?
At my prom. I'd
they
like to go to prom,
this.
Too.
Jeff Kroll is here. He's an attorney over at Salvi, Shostak, and Pritchard PC. And Jeff, I've known you a long time. I just read something very interesting in your bio that says Mr. Kroll, that's your dad, right, was selected by his peers for inclusion in the Best Lawyers of America in 2011, 12, and 2013. What's happened to you?
Well, I'm still. That's just not updated.
And
if your peers aren't going to vote for you,
no, who
would
you?
Usually
no.
they don't vote for you. Bill would never vote for me for anything.
No, I wouldn't vote for Wendy.
My
for
family
anything.
Wouldn't vote for me.
Congratulations.
Right. Welcome back to the show.
Thanks.
Always good to see you. And today the topic we want to discuss, it's prom season, so your legalities when it comes to holding prom parties, right?
Yeah, and it's, you know, back in the day, we were all going to the prom parties. We were all drinking and driving and doing a bunch of things we shouldn't have been doing, and it's a different world we live in.
Sure.
You know, back when we were all kids, your parents would say, you can't have a party because I don't want to get arrested. And that mm-hmm. really wasn't true. Mm-hmm. Today it is. There's new laws in Illinois where the parents, if they knowingly permit underage drinking, can be held responsible.
Okay. I have seen parties going on in our neighborhood as I'm out walking the dog, and I don't say anything to anybody, but I notice that there are underage people drinking and there are kegs. If I'm noticing, aren't the police noticing?
Boy, they'd be pretty busy. I mean, that'd be a full-time job for half the police. But it's amazing now how a single on your just a text, all of a sudden you've got 50 kids at your house
yeah.
in a
oh,
nanosecond.
Yeah. That's true.
And it's you know, back in the day we had to do telephone, you know, the game of telephone. Mm-hmm. But it's sad because you know, I've got a son that's a sophomore, and you see them go from a little boy that's colicky to now they're big boys.
Yeah.
And they're
Young men. It's
Young men. They're young men.
So what happened in society where somebody woke up and said, well, this is potentially dangerous. We can't just have underage kids drinking and then driving. Did one thing happen or a series of things happen?
Unfortunately, and it's like any law that changes, and I can't wait for something more stringent with texting and driving someday, but it takes a death.
Yeah.
It takes a bad accident of a child that leaves a home and is underage drinking and then kills somebody else or kills himself. And that's essentially what prompts these new laws. And should it have been a law a long time ago?
Yeah, absolutely. It should have. And there are a lot of parents. I mean, come on, we were growing up. Bill, I will not speak about this because you probably never had a drink underage because you were perfect.
I had very few drinks underage, really.
I had a lot.
Much of a drinker.
But there were always those houses that you could go to whose parents they'd let you drink. They'd be aware of it. They'd look the other way. It's not like they would buy us alcohol.
But, you know, which is the right answer? Because you at least know where your children are at those times and what they're doing. You can monitor.
What if they have to stay overnight? Isn't that kind of a rule?
They stay overnight. Absolutely. No driving.
Yeah.
No keys. You turn the keys in. I don't want to see a single car in the driveway or anything else.
Uh-huh.
Is that the right answer? Or do you say, no, not in my house. Get out of here. And all of a sudden they go to a park or they're driving around. And what's the right answer? I think this is a great step in the right direction, holding parents accountable.
Sure.
But kids are kids.
They'll find a way.
And they're growing to be young men and young women. Beautiful girl named Donna could be showing up at our party, and my son trying to act cool will drink to try and please her or do whatever.
Yeah.
It happens. I hate to say we learned the hard way, but we've kind of all been down that road to some extent. We've lived it.
There were always parents, and I'm imagining it's the same way today, who would be very willing to look the other way. They knew there was drinking going on the premises, but they think, if I don't see it, I'm fine, but it's not that way.
Well, that would be like me. It would be akin to me saying, Mom and I are going downtown for the night.
Mm-hmm.
Have fun at prom. You can have some people over,
right,
but I don't want you doing anything stupid.
Right.
Okay, so you're downtown in your apartment, and your kid does have, and I'm just saying you in general.
I don't want my wife thinking I've got some apartment diaries.
No.
All right, I'm just saying you in general, though. A couple goes out, and they said, we're going to be out for the night, you know, have fun at prom, which I can't imagine a lot of parents do because they'd want to take pictures and stuff and be around in case of an emergency.
Depends if it's a first kid or third kid.
Yeah, right. That's true.
Right.
But so say a kid has people over, and someone leaves the house and gets in an accident. I mean, we say that the parent will be held responsible. What can they lose? Their entire house? What would happen?
There's criminal sanctions that are available to them.
Even if they weren't home?
But if they know about it. You know, for example, do they leave the liquor cabinet unlocked? Is there...
My God, who has a locked liquor cabinet? I'm sorry.
Yeah,
knock on wood, my kids don't drink.
Yeah, but you know, all it takes is the one kid.
That kid.
And it's... we should do this in an afternoon over cocktails, this conversation. It's a different world we live in today. And they're at such difficult ages. Prom is their Super Bowl.
Yeah.
They're going to push the limits to whatever they can at that age. And you just want them making the right decisions and smart decisions. And if we as parents are going to turn a blind eye and say, Mom and I are going downtown, wink, wink, you know, by the way, there's beer in the garage or whatever.
Yeah.
You can be responsible if you know about it. And that's the thing. What did you know about it? What'd you do about it?
So what do we do as parents?
I'm a hypocrite because I don't know. I stand there and say, we shouldn't do this. These are good laws. But yet, do you want to know where the kids are at and what they're doing? Or do you just want them roaming the streets?
Jeff, I'm guessing the same rules apply to marijuana and other drugs too, right?
Absolutely.
The parents are still responsible if they know something's going on at their house. It's
absolutely
on them.
And you know, it's...
I hope not other drugs. Marijuana to me is like beer. I hope there are parents not letting kids, you know, use heroin or cocaine and they're aware of it. That to me would really be worrisome.
Well, that's irresponsible. I mean, I can't believe that people do that. But the concern is, you know, it starts with marijuana. And is that the gateway, you know, to a new drug?
Mm-hmm.
Where does that end?
Mm-hmm.
It's difficult. I've got, I don't know people, but hypothetically, there are people that are fine with getting high and driving, but geez, they say you better not drink and drive. I mean,
Right.
Where's that line drawn?
Where's the line?
All right. More of this discussion with Jeff Kroll, attorney over at Salvi, Shostak, and Pritchard PC. If you'd like to jump in, if you have any questions or comments, we're easy to reach. We're at 312-981-7200. More after this. Still laugh. It's Wendy Snyder. Jeff Kroll is here, attorney for Salvi, Shostak, and Pritchard PC. We're talking about prom season and how much of the blame falls on you should something happen to your kids or their friends. If you have a party before the prom or after the prom and something horrible goes on, how responsible are you? Have parents been prosecuted here in Illinois? Have they?
Yes, they have. There's a couple noted cases up in Lake County, but it's happened before. You can get hit for millions of dollars in a verdict for someone being injured or death because of something that goes on at your house.
Yeah.
I just think parents need to be a little more cautious. It's, you know, the other thing, along safety reasons and talking about prom, you know, when we first got babysitters for our kids, I mean, my wife would interview them, et cetera, but yet we have zero issue with putting them in a limo and saying, good luck, have fun. We as parents need to make a smart decision regarding limos.
Are they certified?
Is the driver have coverage? Is this a regular business? If you go to Craigslist, you can purchase a limousine right now and hold yourself out as a limo driver.
Why don't you do that, Bill?
I might do that. You don't need to be
ride share.
You don't have to be licensed, bonded,
well,
anything.
Well, you should be.
You should be.
But you don't have to be.
No one's checking it?
And I defy you to check. If you're going in a limo to O'Hare, are you checking?
No.
Never.
I never would say, can I see your credentials? Would you?
No, I wouldn't.
If he had a little chauffeur's cap, if he had a baseball cap like you, I'd wonder and say,
hey, handsome, take me to O'Hare.
And you know, I have two boys and they're not like girls are better at planning things. So girls, I could see young girls calling a bunch of limo companies and getting price, quotes and saying, okay, this is the best. We should use this.
The cheapest.
So do we as parents jump in and say, here, let me look at that before you book someone?
You should, because you know, the other issue is what's stopping me buying a limo and then going to a local high school and putting up one of those signs, you know, where you can rip off at the bottom.
Sure.
Yeah.
Phone number, limo driver. No one's checking. No one's checking.
But if you do, as the parent, you know this, Jeff, you have kids. If you say to your kids, I'm gonna do some research and check, you go, oh, Dad, what are you, please.
You know what, though? No. You can look yourself in the mirror and live with yourself.
Yeah.
It's when the opposite happens, when you don't do that little extra
You're
kicking yourself. I know plenty of parents in my line of work that have regrets about a decision they made, about, you know, not stopping them from going to this party, allowing them to drive. You know, you've heard all the stories as well.
Yeah.
And we as parents, you need to let them get a little upset with you for 10 minutes because you're trying to be responsible mom or dad. You can live with yourself after
right.
that.
That's when you make up the story about, I knew this family
totally.
Right.
that used a limo
happened.
And Bill Leff was their driver.
Yeah. Yeah.
Hilarity ensued, but they didn't get there in one piece.
And then the kid says, what happened? And you always have to say, they moved away.
He turned the radio.
Right. Made it dangerous for everybody.
And being a parent is a difficult thing. And I kind of wish I had a girl, although I know how I was as a teenager, and I kind of relieved now that I don't have a girl. But parents do get into the whole prom thing. Judy, what did you do for your kid's prom?
Okay, let me just preface first that times have changed since when we had our prom, most of us.
Yes.
And I'm not talking to the 25-year-olds or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, you have to put a more structured environment down, even if you're temporarily hated. Usually they'll go back to the girls' house for the picture. Then they'll go out to eat a special dinner in their group. Then they'll go to the prom. And then after that, usually somewhere like IHOP or something like that, just for like dessert and, you know, so the whole group can be together. Let them add on a movie and put a curfew. They have to be home at 2. Those who want to drink are going to find a way to drink or smoke anyway.
Yeah, that's
like
true.
But the biggest security system in the world around your house, but if somebody wants you, They're still going to find a way in. What I did was I hosted a prom brunch for 30-some kids.
Oh, my God. Are you crazy, Judy? 30-some kids?
Oh. Yeah, Patty tells me I'm crazy, too, but, you know.
Oh, Patty Vasquez?
Yeah.
Or just an imaginary friend named Patty.
Judy, we gotta like 30 seconds here. But so you made brunch for 30 kids, and so they were drinking, but you didn't let them leave.
But they didn't want to leave. I mean, I had gone to Party City and bought these Sterno things to put, like, the eggs, the pancakes, the bacon. I had fresh fruit. I had gone and bought donuts at, like, 5 o'clock in the morning. And, of course, there's not enough seating, so some sat on the carpet, whatever. No one spilled. Someone did fall off of a rubber, like, yoga ball that she was sitting on because she lost her tail.
Well, Judy, we appreciate your idea, and if you want to tackle 30 kids, that is a great idea to say, you know, because they are going to find some way to do it. Judy's absolutely right. Do you agree?
You know, they bring in the water bottles that are filled with vodka or what have you. You know, everything that we tried to do or accomplished when we were younger, they're doing the same thing. And I haven't heard about the yoga ball injury. It's not that prevalent in prom season, but it happens.
What are the damages they could sue for? And is that something you could sue if, you know, Judy was aware of the yoga ball and let them sit on it drunk?
Yeah, I'm not going to comment.
Thanks, Judy.
I just know I'm going to Judy's house after this.
Yeah, how about that? And to have 30 kids at your house?
For a brunch.
There's no way I like my kids that much or their friends.
No.
And real quickly, Cindy wanted to say something. Cindy, we were talking about drinking at your house. Or do you let them? What do you want to share with us?
Well, this is when my kids were younger. They were 19 and 20. But their birthday, they were going to college and they were home for their birthday. So they wanted to have their friends over. And I knew that they drank in college. So I wasn't blind to it. But what I did was I made sure that whoever came, that their parents knew that they were going to have drinking and they couldn't leave. They had to stay the night. So we had probably 15 boys or girls over, and they all their parents had to know. And if I doubted them, I would use the cell phone and call their parents and make sure that they knew.
We have to be more involved.
But I wanted it to be in a structured environment. I wanted them to know that they were going to be okay. I wanted the parents to know that what was going on, because these are all college kids and they were, you know, they knew that they were going to be there. They knew that they had already been drinking in college. So coming home and doing it really wasn't all that different.
Right. That's a great way of doing it, Cindy. Thank you very much for sharing it. And real quickly here, what happens if you do call the parents and notify them and say, just so you know, the kids are going to be drinking here? Does that get you off the hook at all?
No, you know about it now. You've got knowledge.
Oh, you've just
about
admitted it.
You're put on notice.
Thanks.
You know, so that's a problem.
Jeff, thank you.
Thanks
appreciate
for having
that.
Us.
That's
and
Jeff
thanks, Cindy.
Kroll, attorney for Selvey, Shostak, and Pritchard PC. If you want to reach Jeff, selveylaw.com is your best bet. He's also on Twitter at Kroll, K-R-O-L-L, Law. Thanks, Jeff.
And I'm not giving Wendy my cell phone.
No, do not give her your cell phone.
Give it to Judy, though.
We can do that for you. A quick break, Jeff. And then some news. It's Phil and Wendy on WGN.
Thank you, Kim. It's a very special day in the world of comics. I want to start by saying, Bill, I remember before Jim and I were married, we used to lay in bed on Saturday nights and read comic books.
Sure.
And he would read, like, all the good stuff, like the DC comics, and I would read my X-Files comics and Archie.
Yeah.
Maybe a little different.
Yep.
But it's really fun to hold a comic book and read a comic book, and a special day, a special thing's happening with DC Comics.
Yeah, the 100th issue of Action Comics, and we'll get into the history of Action Comics.
1,000.
1,000. Did I say 100? It's 1,000. That's 10 times 100, buddy. I did the math in my head. Gary Kulabono joins us, former president of the Moondogs chain of comic shops. Why former president? You should still be running these comic book shops.
Well, you know, I was one of the lucky guys. Back in the 90s with the death of Superman,
yeah,
everybody was into comics. There were comic book stores everywhere. And I had built a chain based on the fact that you didn't have to have old comics, that there was so much merchandise being produced,
yeah,
you know, T-shirts, trading cards, toys, action figures,
yeah,
that I could just put these stores in malls, and I wouldn't have to worry about trying to find a collection of old comics.
Right.
I would get new merchandise just coming out of a box.
Yeah.
And my customers wouldn't be all of the old guys, you know, looking for a VG copy of something. They would... These were moms with strollers, because
yes,
we're right in, you know, Randhurst, Ford City, Lincoln Park. And so big company came and bought me out.
Oh. And you're okay with that? You don't miss that a little bit?
It was, you know, top of the market, public company.
You did all right.
I'm the lucky guy.
Yeah.
You
know, I remember Moondogs. Gary Kulabono. I keep doing it wrong. Kulabono.
Mm-hmm.
That's it.
Perfect.
All right. You are a vintage comic book expert, and you're a collector, and you were talking to Bill. First of all, you brought something in the studio that listeners can have a chance to see. May I just tell you how sweet it was as you're showing these beautiful things and memorable things to Bill? He's like, Gary, thank you so much for giving these to me.
Yeah,
that was
really
a nice try.
Yeah.
It's like a religious experience.
Well, tell us what I'm looking at, what I'm holding in my hands right now. This is part of comic book history, a big part.
It is. Prior to Action Comics number one hitting the newsstands in June of 1938, probably maybe a month older than that, but in June of 38, that's the cover date for Action Comics number one. But about a year before that, DC was trying to, you know, come up with the right title to showcase a new character. That character, of course, Superman. And so, but they weren't ready to publish anything at this time, but they wanted to lock in that title, Action Comics. I mean, it's got to be the greatest title in the history of comics, right? So they decided they're going to make these, like, handmade fake comics. They're basically fake comic books. And they took things together, cobbled them together, and made these comics and sent them to the Patent and Trademark Office so that Action Comics can be secured, the trademark. And
with the logo and everything like that.
The famous Action Comics logo.
Which you'll recognize, listeners, when you see it immediately.
Oh, sure. It's going to be on Action Comics 1000. It's been on, they use that logo for 1,000 issues. So I had an opportunity to buy these from the retired president of DC back 35 years ago. And I'm the luckiest guy on the planet because nobody owns these except me.
Oh my God.
There's three of each. Right. You have one of each. I'm holding two early Action Comics. So one is in the vault over at DC.
And then there are two others outside of the vault, the one you're holding. And then another one that's out there somewhere that I used to own and sold about 20 years ago.
And does that same owner have it, or did he or she turn around and sell it again?
We're pretty sure he still has it because I kind of monitor all this stuff within collector circles.
You know, when you're giving up a child for adoption, you want to kind of keep track of them. It's much the same, I would imagine.
Yeah. You do. You kind of keep track of them. And I'm the guy. I mean, I'm the comic book guy who kind of keeps track of this. If you go on page 14 of the comic book price guide every mm-hmm. year, there's a little acknowledgement for me keeping track of all these rare comic books.
Nice. All right, so when Superman makes his debut in what year?
1938.
Jeez. There's already some superheroes in comics. He's by far not the first.
He's not the first superhero, but he's basically, well, you know what? I'll argue that he is the first superhero.
Really, yeah?
There were other guys that were masked adventurers and stuff.
Yeah.
But they weren't superheroes like this.
Did they have names? Who were some of those masked people?
The Arrow is one.
Oh, part of that.
There's...
not Green Arrow.
It's a different publisher.
Yeah.
You know, and really, there's just a handful of them. A lot of them were detectives. You know, like the Dick Tracy clones.
Yeah.
You know,
gumshoes, Bill.
They were gumshoes, Wendy. That's what they were. They were gumshoes. So what did the guys get right when they came up with the idea for Superman? What did they do that nobody else had thought of that was so innovative, do you think?
Well, actually, it was a big risk on their part. Okay. The Siegel and Shuster, the two kids from Cleveland, had been peddling the Superman concept as a daily Sunday comic strip.
Yeah.
And nobody wanted it. And so in 1937, it got published in 38. But in late 37, they decide, we'll take it to the comic book guys now.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't want it to be a comic book. They wanted it to be a comic strip. And that was really important because all the comic strip guys were the legit guys. Mm-hmm. The comic book guys, they were...
The scum of the earth,
down in the basement, around the corner of publishing. And so they, when they couldn't sell it as a strip, they went to the comic book publishers, and that's when DC picked it up. Harry Donenfeld.
True or false, Siegel and Shuster made virtually no money off of Superman?
False.
They came later. Right, it came much later.
No, they made a lot of money early on.
Oh, did they? Yeah.
Early on, in relation to the earning potential during that time. In the early 1940s, they were making thousands of dollars a week. And so they were doing very well. But then they saw that the publisher was making, licensing started almost immediately. They were making so much money, and they were getting basically crumbs. Now, the crumbs were big, though. This is where the argument comes in.
Yeah.
The crumbs were big, but then they said, well, we're going to sue because we want our rights back.
Right.
And that's when things went south for them. They lost all their lawsuits. They had bad lawyers. They had bad advice. They lost all the lawsuits and they became pariahs. Aww. That's when they became destitute. In fact,
heartbreaking to hear that.
When the first Superman movie in 78 came out, these guys were like, they were basically delivery men for sandwiches to the offices at DC Comics.
Terrible.
I know.
And it's because they could have got a better, they could have had Michael Cohen be their lawyer.
they have... through and efforts within the industry, in their later years, they did get credit. They did get stipends.
They did.
Their heirs now have made huge windfall profits.
Good.
I don't know if that's even the right word. They got what was coming to
the royalties.
Yeah.
All right, Gary Colabono, former president of the Moondogs chain of comic shops, vintage comic book expert. Tomorrow is the day, April 18th of this year, 2018, DC Comics will publish the 1,000th issue of Action Comics. We'll tell you how you can get your hands on one, how you can look at rarities, where to go as we continue. It's Bill Leff, Wendy Snyder, 720 WGN. Tomorrow is a big day. Wednesday, April 18th, 2018, DC Comics will publish the 1,000th issue of Action Comics. Gary Colabono is in the studio with us, and you are going to be at Comics Revolution, 115 West Central Road, downtown Mount Prospect, tomorrow as that 1,000th comic comes out from 5 to 8 p.m. What will you have with you?
Well, I'm going to bring my prototype Action Comics number one and my prototype Action Funnies number one, so everyone can see them and hold them and get a picture with them. These are the pinnacle of my collection. I have only brought them out of the bank vault three times in the last 35 years. So this is a real opportunity to see something so rare that to see them in one place at one time, it's never happened before.
It's a shame you have to keep them in a bank vault because the art is just so beautiful and they're such an important part of pop culture history. But you kind of do. They're too valuable to just keep anywhere else, right?
That's right. I feel like I'm a custodian of like pop culture history and relics and stuff. And these things belong in museums, and maybe they will be someday.
They should be.
But right now, they're mine.
And you want to share it.
I want to share it. I want to show it.
Why? That's so sweet of you.
Well, you know, we collectors. I just saw Bill's collection of action figures, a photo. We want to share this stuff.
Yes.
Because we love it.
What is it if you can't share it? Because of you, my husband collects just Star Wars action figures. But it's so funny, you know, when the bug guy comes by to spray the house, he's like, hey, check this out. What is a collection if you can't share it with someone?
Exactly. But I got to tell you, that's pretty common. There are so many collectors who just want their stuff, and they don't want anybody to know about it, you know. And so on one hand, I understand that,
from a
security issue. But, you know, this stuff isn't in my house. I'm not worried about somebody banging in my house or something.
Graphic novels, good for the comic business or not?
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Right now, and that's the one thing about Comics Revolution that's a little bit different. You know, they don't sell. Well, I think they do have a few back issues in their old comics. Now, in fact, we just brought some in the last couple of months. But for 20 years, he never sold any old comics. What he was selling are
current.
He's selling the current comics.
The new Archie. I love it.
Yeah. But he's working with the local libraries, bringing graphic novel sections, helping the librarians to know what to buy.
Yeah.
it's the art form. It's telling stories in words and pictures, not just words.
Right.
And it's important.
And we were saying this off the air. My husband's been reading a lot of Star Wars comic books on the computer. It's different than, and he still reads, you know, a comic book too, but there's something to be said for holding that comic book in your hand.
Yeah, the tangible aspect of it. That's why we collectors, you know, comic books have a number on the cover.
Mm-hmm.
Thank God for that, because you want to have them all. So as a collector, you go, okay, I have 4, 5, 8, 9. Well, I need 5 and 6 and 7.
Yeah.
And so, but when we find them, we want to hold them and we want to touch them. And we still smell them too. Make sure they're.
Explain that, because people go, I don't understand. Why are you smelling comic books?
It's a sensory thing. Old paper smells a certain way.
Yeah.
Sure.
And we want to make sure that it's not musty. We want to make sure it doesn't have smoke from cigarette smoke in there. We want that nice. It's almost like aromatic.
Yeah. Gary, if you look at the box office, Black Panther has exceeded what everybody ever thought it could ever do. If you look on television, you've got, I think it's 13 or 14 shows that are based on superheroes from comic books. What's going on? How did it all of a sudden it become such a mass cultural thing?
You know, I think it always could have happened. But the technology couldn't catch up with the comic book page. See, what happens in between panels is as important as what you're looking at in the panel. We remember old Spider-Man cartoons, and we remember, you know, bad TV shows.
Sure.
Even Wonder Woman, as much fun as it was. I mean, you know, it
the Linda Carter version?
Sure. It's lame compared to what's happening today.
Yeah.
And so today, because of the technology, and really, Disney, Marvel, they have a formula that is just so unbelievable.
Yeah.
They know what makes it work. And they're not they're not dragged down. They're not burdened with all this 80 years of history that Superman is.
Yeah.
If something doesn't seem to translate well from the comic to the screen, they forget about it. I'm not going to worry. It's not the same as the comic book. And the fans today just want they want to be entertained.
Yeah.
And so they're not burdened with all this history that DC seems to be done. You know, they have, you know, too much. Well, we can't have Superman laughing and joking, because if he did, he wouldn't be Superman.
But
now, you know, Tony Stark was a pretty serious guy when he first started.
Oh, yeah.
You know, he's the biggest joker in the whole Marvel universe.
Right.
I want to volunteer my services. There is nothing more cathartic to me and therapeutic than stuffing comic books on the cardboard into the bag. And then if you need any help, I'd be glad to help you.
You know, there's nothing better than bagging comics.
I love it.
I know. It's so great to hear this.
That's Wendy's superpower.
Wow.
That's her origin story.
That is, I'm the old bag girl.
My wife has never bagged a comic in her life. You know, because I shouldn't say she puts the board in the bag, but not the comic.
I love doing it. I'd help my husband do it all the time.
She's on board with your affliction, your love of comics. She's okay with everything.
I'm the luckiest guy in the world. She got to be a stay-at-home mom because I was selling comics.
Excellent. I love
to
hear it.
It's a pleasure to meet you. It really is. Gary Colabono, correct? And again, where are you going to be tomorrow from 5 to 8?
Comics Revolution, downtown Mount Prospect, from 5 to 8. You'll get to hold, see, touch, take a picture with these rare artifacts.
They're stunning.
You have to give them back, you know. He's trying to hide them under his folders.
Right. We got
to
go. We have to leave.
Such a pleasure.
There's a fire alarm.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks, Gary. More after this. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.